This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All right, well, welcome to another edition of Reinvention Radio. I'm Steve Ulscher, really glad you are here with us today. And, you know, I got to tell you, I was looking forward to this show for quite a while, and it's finally here, so it's just kind of, you know, I mean, I got Chase on the line here. Chase, you can probably appreciate that, right? Where you look forward to something, and then all of a sudden it's there, and you're like, "Whoa, okay, it's actually here. It's time." It's kind of like the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. I don't know if
yes.
you saw any of that, but it's like, you know, going on for months, and then all of a sudden it's like, "Whoa, it's here," and then it sucks. So hopefully our interview will be a lot better than the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. At least that's the plan, right? You didn't pay $100 yes. bucks for that, did you?
No, sir. Sure did not.
Yeah. All right. Good. Very smart man. Very smart man. So let me just introduce who today's guest is. And as I said, I was excited about this when I first heard about what Chase is doing, and I think you'll find it to be pretty interesting because, you know, when we talk about dismantling the status quo, you know, a lot of people talk about it, but few people actually live it. And I think Chase is, you know, really a living example of what dismantling the status quo looks like. So just as a brief overview, Chase Barfield is my guest today. I will tell you the name of the site that I am going to be referring to, which is livingnomadstyle.com. So livingnomadstyle.com. So you can probably get a little bit of a sense in terms of where this conversation and what this you know, what this episode is all about, because that is what Chase and his family does, is they live nomad style. And what's really interesting, and just referring to livingnomadstyle.com, is, you know, historically when people are asked about what they would like to have more of or do more of in life, the two most common answers are travel more and spend more time with their families. So, you know, what Chase and his family decided to do was go from that sort of typical suburban-esque lifestyle of being in the big house and selling the house and packing everybody up into a truck and a trailer and heading out on the road. So that is generally who Chase is, although he does a lot more, which we'll talk about, because obviously you've got to have a certain ability to live the nomad lifestyle. That's actually a tongue twister. You say that enough times, live the nomad lifestyle. But you know, there's obviously a pretty good backstory here. But Chase, give us like the, I guess really just kind of the brief overview of what you've done in your general business career. And then what sort of, you know, what was the straw that broke the camel's back where you were like, you know, we just got, you know, this has got to change. We've got to get out of this suburbia thing. We've got to, you know, just move in a direction that is more aligned with who we really are. Take me back through some of the career stuff just generally. And then what was that straw?
Sure. First of all, thank you for, you know, inviting me to be on the show. I've been looking forward to it, and I'm really excited about it. Always happy to share our experiences in order to try to help others have an easier transition and understand that this lifestyle can be attainable by them. But what I actually do is, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, a businessman, and an investor. You know, most people, they don't exactly understand what that means, so I tell them I'm a business strategist or business consultant. I create strategic plans and advise leadership in my own companies as well as others on how to achieve the objectives, you know, within the plans. My efforts are commonly focused on helping businesses lower expenses, increase sales, go into other markets, etc.
So that's how you pay for the nomad lifestyle then, right?
Yes, that's generally how I pay for the nomad lifestyle.
And you're still able to do that from the road, yeah?
Yes, I have three requirements, and my wife, which I affectionately refer to her as Mama Nomad, she actually picks out our destinations of where we are going to have our home bases. And she had asked me, you know, what are your requirements in these? And I said, well, I have to have a stable internet connection, a good mobile phone signal, and I have to have an airport within about an hour or so from where we're located. You give me those three and I can work from anywhere. And that is because many years ago, I actually had my own office, brick and mortar, and I didn't like to be confined into the office. I like to be more mobile, but this was before it got real big to be able to telecommute, and I started pushing a lot of my resources to online so that way anywhere I had an internet connection, I could work. So, you know, I had been preparing for the Nomad style without knowing I was preparing for it quite some time ago, and my business has all of my different businesses and what I do has allowed me to have an easier transition. As far as the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, many people, and I'm sure that you can readily identify with this, many people think that just because you own your own business that you have your own time schedule and that you can just go away for months on end anytime that you want. Which, you know, some people attain that. I am not at that point quite yet. And my wife had pointed out that it had been quite some time before we were able to actually go away as a family that was not business related. Because sometimes I'd go on business trips and bring the family. Afterwards, we might go and visit some of the sites, but it was a big rush. So we sat down one day. We were living just outside of Austin, Texas, and my wife had come to me and said, you know, we never get to take any vacations, and because of all the work that you're doing, and you have the ability to be able to be geographically independent in your work, but we never get away, because even if we do, you're stuck in the condo, the hotel, the resort, wherever it is that we would go. So we did as we commonly do as a problem-solving family, and we came up with a solution, which ended up being our nomadic lifestyle. And it was just, we wanted to be able to travel and show our children, you know, different places rather than just reading about it. And wanted to really be able to travel and spend more time as a family and include daddy in those things rather than just my wife and three boys going out doing it without me.
Yeah,
so that was the straw.
And you're going on about a year now in terms of being in that nomadic lifestyle. One of the questions that I had, you know, is you talk about – I mean, a lot of people look at it and say, well, you really cut down on expenses, right? I mean, you don't have the house, you don't have the mortgage, you don't have the utility bills, you don't have this, that, and the other. But at the same token, you still have to have a place to sleep. You still have to have a place to bathe and all that fun stuff. So that would either mean one of two things. Now, based on what I'm to understand, you don't actually have like an RV. You've got a truck that kind of looks like, you know, maybe a GMC or something. And a trailer, so you don't have an RV. So you're staying in hotels, or what are you doing every night? And that's got to be more money at the end of the month than it would have been for you just to stay in the house, no?
Well, I'm smiling ear to ear because that is a real common question, and it's actually one of the pleasant misunderstandings about all of this. Whenever we were outside of Austin in what we call a stationary home. Whenever we were in our stationary home, you know, our family expense per month for everything was around $5,000 a month in order to support this family of five there. And our monthly budget now is actually less than that. We were able to reduce it by anywhere from 20% to 40% depending upon where we're going and where we're staying. And yes, we have a Ford Explorer, and we pull behind the Ford Explorer a 5-foot by 8-foot cargo trailer that we have 42 12-gallon extra durable plastic bins, and each bin is labeled whether it's kitchen or living room or clothes and whose clothes they belong to, et cetera. So we literally bring all of our belongings with us, with the exception of we had some some family heirlooms and some things that were, you know, very meaningful to us that might have been too big to carry on the road. My wife has a piano that was passed down through generations. So we have all that in a climate-controlled storage. But we sold everything else, and if it didn't fit in the trailer of the car, it didn't come with us. Now,
so the dog got left behind then, I assume. Yeah, still sit in the house waiting for you to come home. Yeah.
Well, because before we became nomads, we actually rented houses and moved from place to place every few years.
Oh, so trying the dog to find, was thoroughly confused.
Yeah,
then.
Yes, that's right, thoroughly confused. But how we find our places now, we actually utilize a service called HomeAway. HomeAway.com.
Yeah, sure. We've got a place on VRBO, which is a sister company to that. Yep, absolutely.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Yeah, that's most definitely correct. Now, the places that we find, you know, they rent them out by the day or by the week as advertised. But, you know, we didn't want to go in and live like people on vacation where you try to cram a bunch of stuff in within 1 week of time. So we rent places anywhere from 2 to 3 months at a time. So we rent vacation rentals that are fully furnished, that have all utilities included. And, you know, that's how we live. Now, as an example, yeah, our last place in Virginia, we were in the Shenandoah River Valley, and we were in an old colonial. It was a couple hundred years old, you know, back probably about as old as our country is, and on 5 or 6 acres right off the river. We rented that for 3 months, and our total expense for 3 months was $5,000.
Wow. You know, yeah.
So that was rent, that was internet, that was electric, that was everything. That was all utilities included.
Yeah, cable so TV. So you cut it down by a third. Now, there's a lot of people, I'm sure, who are wondering, like, okay, that's great if it's just you and your wife, but you actually have kids. So how old are your kids?
Well, they're 10, 14, and 17.
Okay, so you've got, I mean, we're talking about a year ago now, basically. So you've got two kids in high school, a kid in junior high, or probably grammar school at that point. How pissed off are they when you tell them, look, we're pulling you out of high school?
Well, honestly, we have been homeschooling our kids ever since my eldest child, who's, like I said, he's 17 now. He came out of public school, I think, around 10 or 11.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, yeah. So your youngest actually never went to public school at all, and
never.
Your middle child went for just a couple of years then, maybe 3 years?
That's correct.
Yeah, so...
Two years.
So that's a whole nother topic for discussion there. But obviously, if you were homeschooling then, it does certainly make this a lot easier. And I know one of the things that you said that it really resonated with me. And it's funny, like my boys, we live in a fairly, well, let's call it what it is. It's a nice community in Southern California, which is called Carlsbad, just between San Diego and LA.
Sure.
And, there's no shortage of wealth here. And so as such, you've got, you got a lot of privileged kids, which of course, then you get attitudes, and then you have a mix of folks that, interestingly enough, there's an area of Carlsbad called the Barrio, which is kind of a lower income area. And so you've got a mix of people there. And we've got the boys at the Boys and Girls Club after school. And, you know, they obviously come across all sorts of different kids. I grew up in a very mixed environment just outside of Chicago. So I'm, you know, certainly accustomed to that, used to that, and wanted to get some more exposure for the kids, you know, in terms of being around people that weren't just white.
Right.
And, you know, it was interesting because at first they were all gung-ho about it, but recently they've been getting bullied there. And, you know, not just by kids of different ethnicities, I mean, by kids of all ethnicities, and they're not the only ones getting bullied. I mean, it's just, it's kind of a free-for-all. I don't know if you've ever been at a Boys and Girls Club or if you were there when you were younger, but I mean, it is kind of a free-for-all. And so we've been given thought to, like, what can we do with our kids? Because we, you know, obviously we want to expose them to lots of different people. And we want to make sure that they are resilient and know how to deal with life as it's thrown at them. But at the same token, we want them to be safe, right?
Sure.
And so it's that fine line of wanting to expose the kids to different things, but also wanting them to be safe. Talk to me about Was that any sort of driving factor in terms of when you decided to homeschool your children? What were there concerns about safety? And then how does that tie into your nomad lifestyle now in terms of getting them the exposure that they need to other types of people?
Sure. Let me start out by saying I do understand your area and Boys and Girls type club. Although I went to school all over the United States and other parts of the world, I ultimately graduated from a high school in Southeast Los Angeles, just north of you, in a town called Buena Park, adjacent to Cerritos and Norwalk. Mm-hmm. So I understand the area. Now, as it pertains to safety or why we decided to homeschool, there's a few different reasons why we decided to homeschool, and I'll address those, and then I can actually talk to your safety and more social interaction and diversity as a second part. One of the main reasons that we started to homeschool was because many people don't know that our current educational system was actually developed in Prussia when it was still a country, whenever they lost to Napoleon. And the king blamed the troops not doing exactly as they were told as a reason for them losing the war against Napoleon in battle. So they redesigned their educational system so that 92% of the population would do as they're told. 6% managed that 92, and 2% managed the 6. So our educational system is actually designed to produce a bunch of followers. And we wanted to be able to raise leaders, not to say that leaders don't come from public school. I am a product of public school myself. So whenever we considered that, and then we started looking into things like, I'll use an example. Let's say that kids go to school for 7 classes a day, and for easy math, let's say those classes are about 60 minutes and there's about 20 kids per class, which is an average amount. That means that if the teacher had to give each kid in that class direct attended time, they'd get 3 minutes per class or 21 minutes a day. You send them off for over 7 hours and they get 21 minutes of attended time if you tried to make it, even across the board. So that didn't sound real efficient to us. And, our educational system was initially designed for those you had mentioned, affluent or, children of some substance or come from families of substance. Our educational system was originally designed for those that could not afford to teach at home, to have mentors come to them, to have the parents teach, or to have, in-home tutors with a one-on-one type attention. So, all of those were a lot of the factors as to why we decided to homeschool. And we, many people come to us and would ask the obvious question that, so what do you do to socialize your kids? In which case, when that's their first question, my first response is, I'm surprised that you're asking about the quality of socialization rather than education. But then I turn around and I explain that when we first started this, we joined a little homeschool group. It was in a little town and there weren't that many people. But as we moved around, we lived in Naples, Florida at one time, and there was a very vibrant homeschool community there. And in goodness sakes, when we moved to Austin, the homeschool groups there were so big that they had members in the thousands, and they allowed homeschool sports to play against public school sports. They had a Valentine's dance, a prom, regular dances where hundreds of kids came along. And the big difference is that, we want our children to become, as you had mentioned, kind of well-adjusted and be able to get along with different people, different backgrounds within society. But we want them to learn to be able to interact as healthy adults. Whenever you send them off to interact with their peers that are not, they're not always specifically taught how to interact with adults. So you have children that are trying to figure out how to socialize with other children, building those socialization skills. And then they don't really get adult interaction and socialization skills until they get out into the workforce. Many times homeschool kids get the jump on that because they are forced to deal with adults on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So, that's as far as the safety factor. We didn't have as much of the safety factor, but our kids have have interacted with people of various cultures, religions, backgrounds, races, creeds, sexes. I mean, you name it, they've interacted. So wherever we move to, they can kind of insert themselves into the local community pretty well and find some common ground to get started with a conversation.
Yeah, and so what's interesting is you said that you moved around a lot as a kid as well. So
yes, sir.
Were you a military child? Is that what ended up happening, or did just the family end up moving quite a bit?
Well, honestly, I mean, I come from a military family. My dad, both my grandfathers, myself, you know, we're all in the military. But my dad was already out of the military by the time we started to move around. I'd moved four times by the time I was 3 years old. Dad was just a rolling stone.
Mm-hmm.
Liked to move around a lot. But, you know, he did it the traditional way. We moved someplace. He rented or bought a house, and we stayed there for a while, and then he would sell or the lease would be up, and then we'd move somewhere else.
Yeah.
I was a teenager.
Yeah, and so, I mean, obviously then you've got the sort of the genetic disposition already in terms of, feeling comfortable with making changes like that. And, you know, and look, we moved our family cross country from Chicago to the Southern California area just not terribly long after you made the move, into the nomadic lifestyle. So I know how hard that is. And I also know that there's a lot of resentment. And I know that there's, on one hand, it's thrilling. But on the other hand, you know, how do you reconcile the complaints that I know are inevitable of feeling alone and feeling like you just can't create meaningful relationships, right? Because if you've got your kids continuously moving, they continuously have to make new friends, and they continuously are breaking those bonds and then have to forge new bonds. And same thing for you guys. We have found that to be, I mean, how do you replace someone that you've been friends with for 30 years, right? I mean, as an adult, you know, it's, you just can't easily do that. How do you help your kids, and actually how do you and your wife deal with knowing that you're going to be leaving pretty soon, right? I mean, so talk to me about relationships in general and how all of that plays out.
No problem. I'll talk with me and my wife first. It's an easier topic, and then I'll roll into the children. As far as me, just myself, it was pretty easy. I mean, as I had explained, throughout my childhood, I never stayed in one place longer than 3 years. And, I carried that all the way up until whenever me and my wife got married. But I picked up friends from all over. I went to school on a military base in the Philippines, and I was only there for a few years. I'm still friends with a good portion of them because of the benefit of the internet, right? It's a lot easier now with the internet than it was whenever you had to send snail mail as your form of correspondence in order to keep up those bonds. You know, whenever you can have video conferences with your friends and, text, mobile. I mean, there's a plethora of different ways that you can connect. My wife, she grew up her entire life in one particular place. And by the time that we got married, she wasn't friends with most of the people that she grew up with. They moved on. They didn't keep in touch. So she still has, one or two friends from childhood, but the vast majority of them aren't. So what's easy for me and my wife is we found part of a successful marriage is that we are each other's best friend. But we do have, people of the same sex being close seconds. I have a very near and dear male best friend, and she has a very near and dear female best friend. But we just communicate with them on a semi-regular basis. Anytime we're in the area, we make sure that we always get together. So it's pretty easy for us. And I've made business relationships just by meeting someone once or twice and just carrying on conversations throughout the years. Those who want to try to contribute to a relationship do. Those that don't. And, the ones that do, I put effort into. The ones that don't, I don't. Yeah. And she's pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the kids are concerned, we pulled them out of, like I said, we pulled them out of, pulled the two oldest ones out of public school, which they didn't have any real meaningful friends at that point. But as we moved, I said we moved to Naples, Florida, and they still maintain their friendships with those. My oldest son is an aspiring author. So he shares some of your passion there. And, you know, he still communicates with some of his homeschool friends back in Naples. He was just on the phone with one of them last night, actually. And those that continue to put in effort, we use it as a good way to teach our children that not to use the word friends lightly. You can have many acquaintances, but friends are ones that show you an equal amount of respect and want to contribute back to the relationship. So those that, after we move on, that continue to want to try to build, you know, build relationships with our sons are the ones that we encourage to continue in doing that, because we feel it's the quality of the friendship, not the quantity of friendships.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we enabled them with tablets that are capable of video conferencing. They've got mobile phones, you know, they've got internet and email. And surprisingly enough, as we've been traveling, some of their friends have gone on vacations in areas where we are or close to where we are. So we get together with them. You know, there's a family that our boys are friends with, because they have three boys that are from Texas, and our next stop is going to be somewhere up in the Pennsylvania type area. We're actually meeting them to go to Philadelphia together. You know, so that's how we maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, there's a number of questions that I have that I want to talk about after the break here, including you know, how you describe yourself as a nomad, because my understanding is that you say there are four types of nomads.
Yes.
And I'd love to understand a little bit more about those four types. And you know, this is really interesting to me, because you know, one of the things that I noticed about your letterhead, if you will, is that under Living Nomad Style, you talk about normal being rejected and adventure accepted, which I think is awesome. And so I want to talk about the four different types of nomads. And then I'd love to chat a little bit about the direct benefits that you're seeing in your kids over the past year, and generally what you think you know, is going to be the outcome of really sort of cutting the cord, if you will. So
sure.
We're going to take a quick break here with Reinvention Radio, and we will be right back with our nomad guest, Chase Barfield, right after this.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What Is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
Welcome back to Reinvention Radio. And our guest today is Chase Barfield. If you're just joining us, but I don't ever know why I say that, because I don't see how anyone can just be joining us now on a podcast, but that's a whole different discussion. So before the break, man, we were talking a little bit about, well, you've got these four types of nomads that you've identified. And I'd love to learn more about what those four different types of nomads are, and then which one do you fall under the category of?
Sure. Now, these are from our observation, because, you know, there's not a lot of people that are out there that are actually chronicling this kind of stuff. So please take this as our perception. But we view most nomads as one of four types. And we garnered this from those that we have interacted with, ran into, been introduced to, et cetera. The first type is the kind that we call them the backpacking nomads. These are commonly what you see with single people, or, you know, younger couples that they run their own program. You hear about them living in tents, hostels, someone's couch, Airbnb, you know, things like that.
I usually think, and when I think about that, I think about smelly people. So can we just categorize those as like the smelly people? Yes.
Well, I have to run into them on a regular basis, so I'll you to categorize that.
Okay, so I'm making notes here. Okay, so we got the one category, and those would be the smelly people. Okay, go. All right, yeah, got it.
Then you have the type of nomad that is they're popular in the U.S., and you actually talked about them at the top of the program. We call them the RVing nomads. You know, these are commonly couples or families, and all they do is they trade a permanent-based home for a permanent home that can move, right? So they trade a stationary permanent home for one that can move. And that's very popular here within the United States. There are all kinds of RVing nomads. The third type, in our opinion, are ones that fly from place to place. And these are commonly travelers from one country to another. And they may stay in one spot in that country for longer periods of time. So they, you know, they will rent an apartment in a city in a foreign country for 6 months to a year, and then they will drive or fly to another country.
Okay, so let's call those the bougies then. I mean, I think that's a pretty safe a pretty safe summation of that group. Yeah, okay, got it.
And then the fourth, of course, is what we would consider us to be. I mean, we rent furnished home for two to three months, and we carry all our belongings with us in our SUV and cargo trailer. So when we go into a home, we set up and are operational like it's our home within a day.
So let's just call you guys the D-League then, right? I mean, you're not the professionals where you can stay in the Ritz-Carlton everywhere, you know, but you're not the smellies. Because, you know, you actually have something going, but let's just call it the D-League then. So what do you see in the past year? What are you seeing in the kids? I mean, obviously there is a sense of adventure, but I mean, they're still kids, and that only goes so far. So you're about a year into it now. How has sort of the enthusiasm, the adrenaline, if you will, how is that waned or has it grown? I mean, talk to me about what you're seeing in the kids.
Well, I can tell you that when we initially left Texas, that our middle son took it a little harder than our eldest, because our eldest had grown some pretty strong friends in Naples and then learned how to communicate with them whenever we moved to Texas. Our middle son grew some pretty meaningful friends in Texas and exhibited the same behaviors as our eldest whenever we left Naples. So getting started, we've built a pretty strong family unit and taught our kids to rely on our internal, you know, our close family first above and beyond friends, because friends can come and go, but family is for life. And they understood it, but they didn't always appreciate it. As we have gone on this journey, on this adventure, our family unit has actually become a lot stronger. They have noticed the friends that want to continue to communicate and the ones that don't. Believe it or not, we've had our sons, each of them independently, not just joining the choir, coming to us and telling us, thank you for taking them on all these travels. I had one of them say that we do more in a week than most people do in a year, and sometimes even a lifetime. Ultimately, they're thanking us for bringing them on adventure on our dime, right? They get to see all these fantastic places, because they all wanted to do some kind of traveling, but they're able to do it all on our dime rather than their own dime. And our youngest nomad, you know, he's 10. He wants to put his toes on all of the continents of the world. So I think he's got the bug bitten worse than anybody in the family.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll be getting the internet job soon, so he can help to pay for all of that, because we know what that would cost. So, you know, let's kind of just go to the lifestyle side of the equation, which is, like, if you wanted to just kind of hang with some guy friends and that sort of thing and just get a night out, how does that even happen really when you come right down to it? Because, you know, if you're just landing in a new place and, you know, going to, maybe that's not even something you want to do. Does that kind of fly out the window, or was that something that you never really were doing anyway? And so it's kind of a moot point then at this juncture.
Well, whenever I got together as like a quote unquote guy night, what we ended up doing was we got together with the other homeschool parents, and you know, I never went out just for a guy night, and there's not very often whenever my wife would want to go out just for a girl night, unless she'd want to go see, you know, like a romantic comedy. I'd say, you know, take the homeschool moms with you and go see that, and then I'd go over to the homeschool dads and, you know, play some poker and watch some sports or something like that. But I actually enjoy doing all the adventures and things like that with my wife. She enjoys doing it with me. I can understand that's not how everyone is, but it was never really a concern to me. And I get to do, you know, like guy night out things enough as I travel to meet with my clients. And, you know, we go out to dinner, we go out for drinks, because I socialize with my clients beyond just the professional level.
Mm-hmm. Is it like a committee? I mean, do you guys all sit down as a family and decide now where you're going to go next and that sort of thing? Or do you, as the parents, basically just say, hey, you know, let's pack up and we're heading out? How do you decide, like, where to go?
Sure. Well, we actually sat down, my wife and I sat down first and decided the overall overarching journey that we wanted to take. And once we had decided the overarching journey, like whenever we started out in Florida, and we knew that we wanted to work our way up the East Coast all the way to Maine. And then, you know, after that, we wanted to do the same thing with the West Coast and then work our way down through the central part of the United States. So we knew that, and we had a certain timeline. Now, as far as specific places to stay, we actually sit down with the kids and we take their input. You know, we are the parents, so we are the deciding factor. But we do heavily weigh their input on places to stay, on where we go, different types of activities. We actually leave it up to them in many areas of, okay, you guys have the ability to search and do research. If you have something that you're interested in doing, let us know. We'll incorporate it. You know, I've mentioned more than once that our eldest is an inspiring author, and one of his favorite authors is Poe. And whenever we were in Virginia, we went over to Charlottesville, and went to the University of Virginia and saw Edgar Allan Poe's room there. We went to Richmond and saw the museum there, you know, and those were things that he wanted to do. So we incorporate the things that they want to do and the types of places that they want to go in our plans. Mm-hmm. So they have a serious input on it. Ultimately, deciding factor is me and my wife.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, right? Because when you think about it, is it... I mean, look, from your perspective, having now done it both ways, do you think that most people just sort of live a life of quiet complacency, if you will? I mean, do you think most people are just afraid to do what you're doing?
I honestly do believe that many of them, not just afraid to do what I'm doing, but I think by and large, people are afraid to do what they have as far as a want. They sit there and they want to do these things. And, you know, I'm a problem solver. So whenever I hear that somebody wants to do a certain thing, I start to suggest solutions. And whenever I hear nothing but excuses, I stop talking because it's a waste of time. They're in their dream world. And that's fine. You know, if their dreams are what helps them get through day to day, that's fine. Some people are happy being complacent.
Yeah.
You know, we're not.
And is that part of what you think is going on? I mean, do you think most folks just kind of have it in their head that it's okay to take that 1 week vacation if they're lucky, you know, every year, and the rest of the time they're really just working and saving until that magic day when they can cut the rope and then quote unquote live the life that they want to live? I mean, is that what you really feel is going on? I mean, because it seems to me like we spend so much time trying to figure out what we want to do when we feel like we can do it, which means we draw this imaginary line in the sand that once we cross that line, then we'll give ourselves permission to do X, Y, or Z. You know, in your conversations with people, it sounds like when you're talking about the excuses, that's really where a lot of those people are at, is that they just can't do it now because they've drawn that line in the sand. Is that what you're finding?
I would completely concur with your statements that you just made. People are their own worst enemies whenever it comes to putting themselves in a box or a cage. You know, there's two very short stories that I'll share with you. They're just a couple sentences long that scare the crap out of me and cause me to continue to act rather than to sit complacent.
It's a podcast, Chase. You can use real words if you want to. Feel free.
Well, there was one gentleman that actually wanted to retire whenever he was able to save up $1 million. He was, you know, he's a little older, and he was one paycheck away and died. Right. So he worked his entire life in thinking, because he drew that line at $1 million, in thinking that once he hit $1 million, then he was going to really live. Mm-hmm. You know, and then my father told me about this gentleman that he saved up all his life because he just wanted this boat. And whenever he was able to fully pay off the boat, then he was going to be able to just – he wasn't going to travel in it. He was just going to go out in the harbor, fish, things like that. Well, the guy was able to finally get the boat, and he went out on the water and died of a heart attack.
Oy, Jesus.
Which, I mean –
thanks
guess
for
was,
the thanks for the uplifting stories there, Chase. Appreciate that.
Well, they should be used as like Aesop's fables with a moral in the fact that, you know, you're not guaranteed anything, but you have to be a race and you have to die, right? So everything else is subjective. So I try to live every life, every day of my life and every moment of my life, I try to live without regrets. If there's something that I want to do or want to try to do, we create a plan around it and we try to achieve it. I'm not saying that we achieve 100% of everything, but we don't sit there just complacent, letting life pass us by, which, again, some people are happy doing that. But most people, I believe, as you had said, you know, they draw their own line that they won't cross. What's funny, one thing I found is they get scared as they get close to that line, right? Because they've had their entire life that they're working towards this line, and now they're getting close to it, just like you were talking about this podcast, getting close to it. Then they start to get jittery or scared, and, oh, crap, what am I going to do? You know, I've achieved it, or I'm here. Now what? And they didn't train their entire life to be able to live and do as they wanted. They trained it to try to achieve this one specific objective, and then they're lost.
Yeah. So, if you've got no money saved up, I mean, you couldn't do this if you didn't have anything to fall back on, right? So, I mean, can you give us a general picture? You still had, I mean, you must have had that general line in the sand of, I need to have X number of dollars to be able to fall back on just in case, right? Was there a number that you had in the back of your mind, or did you literally just pick up and do it without having any regard at all for what that fallback plan might look like?
Honestly, plan B never even came into my consciousness. We sat down, we decided we were going to work and get it done by any means necessary within the legal confines. We sat down, we said we were going to sell everything. We had a certain plan as to how we were going to get our places. And, you know, we also sat down as a family and charted out my business consulting and what was needed in order to be able to have it grow to sustain our lifestyle, the whole nine yards. I mean, we didn't have a nest egg sitting back saying, okay, well, if we fail, this is what's going to happen. Our thoughts were everything is in our cargo trailer and in our SUV, and worst case scenario, we can all go work on a farm that needs some farm hands that may need to give us room and board while we're there. Right. So that's how we approached it. But we never thought that we would fail. That was never an option to us.
So who was the bit? I mean, you've got family, obviously your wife has family. Who were the biggest cynics, you know, as you guys talked about this? Or did you just, you didn't even tell them, you just called them from the road?
No, believe it or not, we didn't really have any cynics within the family, and it's because we have always bucked the norm. You know, so whenever I say normal rejected, adventure accepted, that has been a mantra for our family since my wife and I first got married. You know, whenever everybody else is eating processed food, we were advocating for organic when there were no organic stores even nearby. We'd drive an hour out of our way for organic fruits and vegetables and grass-fed beef. Mm. I was, you know, a long time ago, I actually started a company where it was in a town with about 7,000 people. And there were already two incumbents, and I was told that I was crazy, that the city didn't need another one. Well, I'm a very fortunate person that was a great success story of mine. And my wife and I, again, bucked the norm. We continued on with, you know, homeopathic and all natural lifestyle. Continue on with that, into homeschooling. I mean, at every corner, it seemed, and I mean, we didn't do it intentionally. We were just trying to have a stronger, better family in what we believe was right. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like every corner we turned, we were going against the norm.
Yeah.
So our family had given up on being cynics because we had proven that we could survive and even thrive with those decisions over and over and over. So they got, I don't know if they just got tired of arguing or if they just realized that we put enough time, thought, and energy into it to be successful at it. But we really didn't have any opposition.
Yeah, you know, and what's really, what's kind of ringing true here for me, at least what I'm sensing is a common theme, is that you really don't wing anything. That there's a plan and a purpose to what you guys do, which which is, you know, that in itself is the rejection of normal, right? Because how many families do you know, and that's sort of a euphemistic you know, but you know, how many families out there really play into this whole mindset of we are going to make a plan and we are going to make it happen, right? In anything, no matter what it is, whether it's a career path, whether it's where you want to live, whether it's how you want to live, whatever it might be. And so, you know, it's really interesting as I sit back now and kind of think back in the last, you know, 40 odd minutes or so. And it's really about the power of the plan that seems to get you in a position where you feel like you have the answers going in. And I think by having those answers, some of that anxiety or most of that anxiety is alleviated.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are completely and totally accurate in that. You know, what I do professionally is actually create strategic plans for my clients. And whenever I do, I create these plans whereby I have a good framework that gives us measurable objectives in order to try to achieve. However, I leave it flexible enough, you know, because stuff happens, life happens. And we implement the same thing within our own family. Like I said, you know, we started in Florida, we wanted to end up in Maine. Where exactly which city or which neighborhood we were going to stay in was flexible, but the going from Florida all the way to Maine was not flexible. That was part of our overarching plan. And, you know, we're an 80-20 type family. If we're 80% sure, 20% unsure, we're confident enough in ourselves that we move forward. And, you know, you're talking about the euphemistic, you know, no other families. I find it very, very interesting that you have families that will put more time and effort into planning their vacation than planning their life, right? I mean, they know where they're going to stay, how long they're going to stay, how much money it's going to take, everything that they're going to do while they're there, but they don't put that much time in just planning their regular life. If they did, they would achieve what they're looking for much faster.
Yeah, and as somebody who does a lot of online marketing, and I firmly believe that there is a customer for pretty much anything that you could create. I hope that you're looking to package some of what you're doing here in a way that inspires other families to potentially live that nomad lifestyle, but also just get families clearer on what they want and how to get it and how to plan for making it happen, because there's there's a science there that I think is of immense value, both for those families who want to consider rejecting normal and going out as a potential nomad, but also those families that would never do such a thing for whatever reasons those might be, but still could benefit from the framework, if you will, that you guys have created around how you've structured your lives.
Yes, that's actually correct, Steve. I mean, we started our livingnomadstyle.com website for two reasons. One was we wanted to be able to look back and read over our own adventures, chronicle our own adventures, and be able to share it with family. Secondarily was there's no blueprint to do what it was that we've done. So we try to share, you know, insights and things that we've learned along the way on there. And I actually took some time. If anyone goes there, there's a yellow sticky note on there, and if
That's at livingnomadstyle.com, correct?
Livingnomadstyle.com. They were to go there, you know, there's a yellow sticky note on there that will lead them into some resources. You know, I wrote a free resource guide that says some of the resources that we've used, like, you know, we've mentioned HomeAway and VRBO, and some of the other ones that we've used in order to get started. And in addition to that, we actually give a free audio. It's about 45, 50 minutes long on things to consider before going nomad, and I provided the transcript for it. It's all completely free. I expect nothing in return, just trying to help others and you know, be a resource to those that may want to consider this lifestyle and help others decide that, hey, maybe this just isn't for me, you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's really great. Livingnomadstyle.com. Awesome. Really appreciate that. And, you know, one last question here. I've got an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old. As of the time of this recording. And yeah, I got to tell you, man, there's plenty of times where we just have the darndest time getting them to not beat the crap out of each other. You know, I mean, it's, you know, a couple of boys and,
yes,
you know, especially on vacations and road trips. And I mean, Jiminy, what, how do you get your kids not to just beat the living hell out of each other? And what do you suggest people do, both, you know, when they're on vacation and not on vacation, as far as, you know, just tips for keeping those kids fired up, entertained, and keeping their hands to themselves?
Well, you know, as far as keeping boys from not beating the crap out of each other, that's an act of futility in the first place. You know, I've got three sons, and I learned a long time ago that that was very difficult. However, I did learn at a younger age for them that whenever the two older ones were young boys and the youngest was still a baby, I told him, I said, you know, you guys are going to want to wrestle or fight. I said, you can't hit each other, you know, in the genitals, in the face, no choking and no using foreign objects. Other than that, go outside and wrestle, right? Because I gave them permission, they actually never took me up on it.
That's funny.
And they wouldn't hit each other and whatnot. But we've, you know, as they got older, you know, they get stronger. And, of course, they can be more dangerous whenever they hit each other. So we have tried to be able to make sure that they each have their own space everywhere that we go. We allow them to go out and go on walks in order to clear their heads. We give them alone time because, you know, we believe everybody needs some amount of alone time. But whenever we are traveling, I mean, we give consequences if they are going to act the fool, but we also give rewards whenever they act respectfully. Now, we don't reward them every time for acting respectfully. We expect them to act respectfully, but whenever there's been a long, trying day, like there was one day we went to D.C. For an all-day long concert event by the Washington Monument. I mean, we got up really early, 7 or 8 o'clock, and we didn't get home till like midnight that night. And they were respectful. They didn't kill each other. Everybody pitched in. So, you know, we gave them extra gaming time and et cetera, just some extra niceties for them. So they've been taught to, you know, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. But if they do act up, we take away some of those things, like their games or their tablets, mm-hmm. and we hold to it. So whatever means the most to them, that's what we will restrict them from, and we hold to it without being lenient and giving in soon. And we don't allow any, you know, any of the back talk or bickering, or if they're complaining, then we just take it away for longer.
Yeah. So no, I hear you, man. And
that's how we do it.
Yeah, it's and this is great. And ultimately, and I mean, as far as I'm concerned, not only should you be writing the book on you know, on living this nomad lifestyle and how to really reinvent sort of that traditional family structure, if you will. But at some point here, I hope you get the you know, the award for the Parents of the Year, because I mean, for what, it takes a heck of a couple to be able to do what you guys are doing. And so, I mean, it's really a testament, I think, in large measure, to the strength of the relationship you have with your wife, who you affectionately referred to earlier as you know, you really think of her as your best friend, which is awesome. And I know a lot of people don't feel that way. And I think in order to do what you're doing, you have to feel that way. So it's really interesting to me to see how You guys have basically said, look, you as a society, you can do what you're going to do, and we're going to do what we're going to do. And ultimately, it's my family. You know, they're our children, and we're going to raise them the way we want. And, and frankly, I applaud you for doing it, and certainly encourage as many folks as possible to learn about what their options are, because I do believe that life ultimately is about understanding what your options are and pursuing what makes the most sense for you. So again, Chase, one more time, give out your website and how folks might get in touch with you if they want to learn more.
Sure. Just visit livingnomadstyle.com, livingnomadstyle.com. Lots of information, contact page if you want to ask any questions. We try to answer any and all inquiries.
Absolutely. So thank you very, very much for being on. And I got to tell you, I every time I do this show, I'm happy to say that I'm continually pleasantly surprised by what I learn and the way that people think and just how folks look to reinvent and dismantle the status quo. So until the next time, thanks for tuning in to Reinvention Radio, and I will talk to you really soon. I'm Steve Ulscher. Have a great day.
You just got dismantled.
Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulscher, visit reinventionradio.com.